B-Pod Studios.
Hand off to White on the delay. Dumps it off for White. Left for White underneath. Breaks the tackle. Accelerates past the five.
James White plays on one station in Boston.
James White is in for a two-point score.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, so I don't know where you're going with this, but I'm excited.
Toucher and Rich.
Hang on to your hat.
Because I got a take a coming.
On Boston's home for sports.
Take train.
The Sports Hub.
Here's third and four with Rodgers. Calmly retreating, looking for something. Flag is down as he throws to the end zone. Incomplete.
Illegal use of hands. Hands to the face. Defense.
And that's a dagger for Matt Patricia and company.
Let's take a look at number 90, Trey Flowers, and see if this is indeed illegal hands to the face. Can't really see it from that angle.
It's going
to
come late. Here it comes. Towards there it is. Coming there.
But again, where?
That's he's on the left shoulder once again. On the left shoulder.
Is Bakhtiari selling that by arching back his head?
But again, that is a terrible call. That's twice on Trey Flowers in crucial situations that the refs have blown the call.
Who's the moron defending it?
Was that Tessitore? No. Is it Gene Steratore that they bring on? Who's Monday Night Football's guy?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they bring in the ref. It's not Steratore because that is.
Yeah, like who's the moron
CBS
saying, here it comes? What the hell do they even have these guys for? What the hell do they have them for?
Well, I mean, they're always wrong.
You don't think there's someone in the booth that's like a stats guy that doesn't like have all the rules down? I mean, Jesus, all this does is make you think the refs suck. They can't even see something in super slow motion. Here it comes. Here it comes. No, it doesn't come, you stupid dummy.
Did you say Sean Perry? John Perry? Okay.
Yeah.
Not the St. Elmo's Fire guy. Oh, that's John Parr. Sorry, not Perry.
I mean, but Perry has been on the roof playing the sax when things got too rough.
Of course.
Will Brinson is the senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. So again, Will, here we are. And I won't waste everyone's time for it. But the league, in some way, shape, or form, feels that Detroit is the team that they don't want to win. They feel that I really believe this, that out of the 32 teams in the NFL, they think that Detroit has the least amount of value being successful. And last night, there were four terrible calls. And, John, I looked at the targeting call,
yeah,
and that was absolutely awful. He was making a play on the ball.
Of course it was, but by the letter of the law, head-to-head hit, defensive back, wide receiver is a flag regardless of intent. And you can't review it. That's all.
Well, that's the only one of the calls, calls that I will give them.
It was a terrible call.
It was a bad call because the intent wasn't there, but by the letter of the law, it's a 15-yard penalty.
Okay, so I have had, who is the Steratore?
Gene Steratore.
We had Steratore on, and he would not dismiss that the Dallas Lions, the Lions playoff game was fixed. He would not dismiss that. He said he that was something he would not dismiss. What is going on in something like that when the officials just go, here we go, and we're just going to start making mad mistakes? And especially Trey Flowers, who I'm not positive how many times he's been penalized. I read something on Twitter he hadn't been penalized, but I don't know. What the hell is going on?
Well, I mean, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Second of all, it's John Perry. Steve Perry was in Journey. Third of all,
not anymore, stupid.
not anymore.
they're still touring. They're still viable. Come on.
Here's the problem. When you, as a league, are walking around bragging about how many people watch your football games, and there's a lot of them. It's like 16 million, and 5 million people are watching a high-intensity baseball playoff game. And then you also are going out and you are fighting at every possible turn to squeeze every possible dollar out of every possible gambling revenue stream, and you're embracing gambling, and then at the same time, you have several calls that directly impact not just the over-under, but the actual spread, and then the outcome of the game itself, upon which many people, hypothetically, had maybe bet on the Lions money line. Just saying. And I think, and I mean, it's just a bad look when you're embracing gambling, you're embracing daily fantasy, you're embracing all these things that are, have financial outcomes outside of the actual game itself, which, by the way, like, Matt Patricia's job is on the line here. He went from first place to last place in the division. I mean, Bob Quinn could lose his job if the Lions miss the playoffs. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but this game is going to determine, long-term success in the league, potentially. It's going to determine short-term success. And it's going to come down to three calls. And I get that there's, over the course of the game, there's tons of missed calls. And over the course of the season, there's tons of them. But this is a $14 billion business. And you can't say, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to follow the very simple and obvious hockey model, wherein they have somebody in the command center, except we're going to spread it out a little bit. You hire three guys. I don't know. Maybe like one of them is some guy from a bar, and maybe one of them is some nerdy kid who's not going to be drinking at a bar, and maybe another one is a ref in training, and you put them at the stadium because you have $14 billion in revenue, and you put them at the stadium and you have them watch these replays and have somebody buzz down to Cleve Blakeman and say, dude, pick that flag up. It's a mess. Or, hey, dude, that's a massive pass interference call where the guy put an arm barred the receiver three times on the way down and you didn't throw a flag. And, like Matt Patricia, he should have challenged that, I guess. But
no, but why? Because they're not going to overturn it.
Right, because he's probably going to lose his timeout. And so it's the NFL has somehow managed to take this pass interference thing and make it 10 times worse. And now has allowed these – I mean, like, what's Al Riveron doing? Like clipping his toenails? I mean, what's he doing?
All right, so you're down with the bankroll boys, and I know that you they're of the conspiracy theories that the refs are behind like so many of these games, and they've got money on the games.
What does he call it?
The wrangle. It's the ref angle.
That's right,
the wrangle. They bet on games a lot of times as to who the refs are, and that helps affect which way that they bet. So watching last night's game, are you of the mind, as egregious as those calls are, that you think that there might be shenanigans, or was it just egregiously bad officiating?
Well, I would say this too. Like when you talk about a wrangle, and I do love a good wrangle, you got to remember, like, sometimes it's just trends. Like the wrangle that, like, for instance, the referee or the umpire, the umpire for the baseball game last night, mm-hmm. for the Nats, Nats Cardinals game. Like Ron Darling at the outset was like, no, I can't remember what the guy's name was. He goes, this guy, he likes to call a strike. He's a strike hunter. And like the first pitch is like a Strasburg fastball at a foot and a half outside the strike zone. He's like, yeah.
But it's different. It's different because every ump has their own strike zone. As long as they're consistent, it doesn't matter. So that's up to you to study the ump's tendencies and to figure things out.
But I'm saying that's part of a wrangle too. Like it's not always just,
fair enough. If you're gonna if you're gonna take an under on a game or something, I don't even know if you can do that in baseball. But
you can't, of course, yeah.
Okay, I don't know. I don't bet on baseball. But so
no, I think in the NFL we are dealing with gross incompetence, not
shenanigans.
Not shenanigans.
Because
yeah.
if you flag Trey Flowers twice in a row for the same thing and you're standing effing right there, I mean that goes beyond missing a call. I mean that's deliberately going after a guy.
I don't think, and I have to go back and watch the replay. But based on the pool report, it wasn't Al Riveron this time who talked to the pool reporter, which is weird because Al Riveron's been like doing these phone calls lately. Maybe he's down in Florida getting reamed out by all the owners. Cleve Blakeman talked about it and said that it was the umpire behind it who threw the flags. And when asked about it, he was like, it's contact to the head or neck area. And it's like, well, that's fine, but
where does the neck area end?
Right. Is on your right shoulder?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but like every single, I mean, like Chris Long, who is, former Patriots pass rusher, Eagles pass rusher, it was on Twitter. It was like, clearly that's not hands to the face. I mean, like everybody knows that's not hands to the face. I think what has happened is a confluence of a couple of things. One, you had three changeovers at the NFL VP level, at the NFL VP officiating level, right? I don't think Al Riveron's very good at his job, and that's not going out on a huge limb there. Two, the departure of guys like Gene Steratore, John Perry, All of these guys who have left and gone and are now working in the media has created, in my opinion, a lack of talent, lack of high-end talent, lack of experienced talent at the referee level at the NFL. And then three, there's just too much going on for these guys to deal with this stuff. But they got a million things happening at a crazy speed that's instantly judged by us on television. And it just draws in, like, there's just too much to deal with.
But, Will, I understand that, and I understand missing a call. I mean, the pass interference was egregious, but whatever. You didn't see it. You have to go out of your way to call hands to the face twice. I mean, you're going out of your way to do that. And when you blow it twice in a row, it just – I don't know.
On the same play on third down with the Lions about to win the game. The problem is even though I'm 100% convinced that it's just gross incompetence, it doesn't look that way.
No.
The optics are that of a league that is more interested in a cash cow team like the Packers winning and a team like the Lions, a sad sack team like the Lions losing, especially when the Lions are always on the back end of these calls. Of course, yeah. Of course, that's the problem is it looks fixed. It looks like there's shenanigans, and I'm not saying there are at all. It just the optics are that way, and the NFL. I don't know if the NFL owners will do anything this week, but they need to look long and hard at it because you can't have the perception that your league that there are shenanigans going on in the league, especially when you're about to like bust open this revenue dam for gambling. I mean, it's not going to work.
Yeah, I mean that when you make those calls, I truly think that they. They feel that they can fix games against the Lions because, like you said, no one cares. No one cares about them. But, all right, so let's get to the Patriots. It's a historic defense. There is a debate going on to which I'm being killed by listeners as that the people saying that I'm a Patriots hater. But how much stock do you put into this defense? I mean, there's no doubt that they're operating at historic levels, but I'd also challenge any team to have played worse quarterbacks throughout the beginning of their season. How much do you buy into this Patriots defense, and how much is it going to matter when they play a quarterback who actually has some level of skill?
Well, I guess we'll find out in December.
Watch your mouth. Right. Monday night, there's a young buck coming in that might have something to say about that.
Oh yeah, no. Look, Sam Darnold's awesome.
That's right.
He's great. He looks. I love Sam Darnold.
You got that.
And of course, Baker Mayfield is awesome too. Don't forget about Baker.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield sucks. Do you finally believe that Baker Mayfield sucks?
Me? No, I like Baker Mayfield. He's fine. He's got a terrible coaching staff.
By the way, let me just let you know, Baker Mayfield this season has less pass touchdowns than Mason Rudolph, less pass yards than Andy Dalton, lower completion percentage than Luke Falk, lower quarterback rating than Eli Manning, and the most interceptions
in the NFL. Falk's not in the league anymore.
Yep. No, Falk has been removed. Well, he cleared the waivers.
Oh, good.
So they could put him on the practice squad.
There you go. So Baker's just killing it.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield's never going to be good.
You guys keep swearing like that, you're going to lose that Marconi. Here's the deal with the Patriots. I think the one thing that you noticed it the first series of the season with a presumably healthy Big Ben in Foxborough and a bunch of good receivers running, decent receivers, like Juju Smith-Schuster, I mean, he has good receivers, running around. He was patting the ball and standing in the pocket for the longest time and just looking and looking and looking and looking, and he couldn't find it. And I really believe, and I think that this is something that's sort of been building for the last few years, but that Bill Belichick, for as much as he claims that he doesn't like analytics, he obviously loves analytics, and he likes – you know, he likes economics. He likes math. He's a nerd at heart. He's an economy or a degree in economics or whatever it is. He built this defense from the back end forward.
Yeah.
He went out and invested in high end cornerbacks who now are playing at like an all time level and have been playing with each other for a long time. And so they move as one and they don't lose sight of anybody. There's nothing resembling, there's certainly no busted coverages. There's not even any open spaces. And so what that does is it gives their pass rushers more time to get after the quarterback. Like you have unlimited rush time because no one is coming uncovered on the back end. And when you can, you know, when you're disciplined like the Patriots and you can stop the run, it allows you to really just smother and cover, scatter, dice, whatever other Waffle House items you want to include on there. opposing offenses. Now, yeah, have they played anybody great? No, I mean, but they're smashing people, and I just think that the league tilted so far in favor of building out from the front and having a great pass rush, and then just finding okay corners to work in the back end, and if you get the pass rush there, the corners will be fine. That Belichick once again zigged while everyone else was zagging, and now he doesn't need to have a great pass rush because he's got great corners. And it's gonna be awesome to see what happens. I think against the Texans and Chiefs, because you have two great quarterbacks, and you have a bunch of good wide receivers, questionable offensive lines. Like, how is this gonna play out? It's really gonna be a true test of what he's created. I think it's his masterpiece because he managed to overcome what he was ahead of the curve on all the, like, Pro Football Focus was talking about this past offseason, and Belichick had already done it like 2 years before. So I mean, maybe I'm wrong and maybe it'll be exposed, but I don't think that's the case.
All right. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Now, where can people see you, Mr. Brinson?
Read me on CBSSports.com, at Twitter at Will Brinson, and the Daily Pick Six podcast. We have 8 episodes a week. Breaking down everything NFL.
Too much. You're saturating the market. All right. Will Brinson, thank you so much for the time, sir.
You guys.
I tweeted, I said, Dan Lifshatz and Joe Murray, in your opinion, were the refs last night on the take? And I got a tweet back from Lifshatz saying 100%.
Oh, Joe Murray. Rigged. Joe Murray emailed me in the middle of the night.
Did
he? He couldn't sleep.
These are guys that, you know, they believe in the conspiracy anyway, but I just like the fact that Lifshatz is like, yeah, 100% rigged.
That was a rigged game. I'm telling you.
If you take a look, and I've just seen a couple of pictures of the pass rush, I think it was the second one where Flowers got called for hands to the face. There is an offensive lineman with his hands to the face of another pass rusher that the refs missed.
There was somebody who sent me a picture, and I didn't watch the entire game last night, so I don't know if I missed this, but was there a 13 Packers on the field that was not called?
I didn't see that.
Okay, because somebody sent me a photo of it, and I don't know if that happened. Well,
all I know is the Lions crapped themselves because they had 12 men on the field.
I saw that.
All right, we'll be right back.
No parents, no rules, no shirts, and best of all,
it's Toucher and Rich.
I read you loud and clear.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. There have been games in the NFL that I believe have been rigged. I will go to my death thinking that knowing that Dallas Detroit playoff game was rigged.
And just to clarify, we had said it was Gene Steratore who we interviewed. It was Mike Pereira.
Yeah, Mike Pereira, yeah. And who would not?
He wouldn't.
He didn't say that. He didn't say it happened, but he would not completely dismiss the idea that that was rigged. I mean, to pick up a flag. Someone, and then when Romo had the ball on what eventually was the game-winning play, the Lions rushed 3, and they were basically laying down and humping them by the end of the play.
You know, they're making a movie about the Tim Donaghy scandal, and I saw the trailer, and it looks awful. Like, there's such a great movie to be made about that, about how they got Tim Donaghy and how he was busted and how the mob was involved and how he got in too deep. Like, that's a good movie, but it looks like something that Lifetime would have made.
All right, Hank, you are a former ref.
Yeah, touch it, Rich. I love you guys, blah, blah, blah. Hey, every year before a season starts, all the officials are brought together, and it's a point of emphasis for certain rules. And they always pick out one rule to really, really emphasize. And I believe that one rule right now is the hands to the face. And with the old officials, you would have the advantage-disadvantage theory. And with this batch of officials now, I don't believe it's incompetence, but I believe that it's, you know, some people are good with the book and they know the rules inside out, but when you get on a playing field, you can't bring those rule books word for word, and that's what's happening. And these old-time officials that are retiring, is that we're going to see a different change of officials. and the way they call a game.
Well, you can't call, I don't care if it's a point of emphasis, you can't call illegal hands to the face twice without there being illegal hands to the face. I mean, I don't care if it's a point of emphasis. I'm not positive it is. But, I mean, regardless, just because something's a point of emphasis doesn't mean that you call it when it didn't happen.
And also, let's say you do that first call, the first hands to the face, and you realize, okay, this obviously wasn't as egregious as I thought it was. Wouldn't you be a little more hesitant to make that second call? You would think that would be the case.
Unless you've
got some sort of financial reason to
look
do that.
You look up in the stands and some guy's got like a bully club like slapping his hand against his hand. Afraid you're gonna get it.
Oh man. But yeah, and as I said, Fred, I'm with you. A conspiracy theory or not, it does seem like the Lions are the ones that get screwed the most. I'd actually like to see some sort of kind of breakdown as to how like these bad calls, and there's got to be some sort of statistic. There's statistics for everything, at like egregious call versus non-egregious call, like one that is, you know, borderline or one that can be disputed. I'm sure there's some sort of scale, and I would think that they have the worst. All right, so I saw this come out, and every year ESPN ranks this, and that is the NBA League Pass rankings. And what that is that they rank in order the teams in the NBA as to which ones are the ones you'd most likely turn on your League Pass. The most watchable teams,
okay,
the best storylines.
Sacramento.
Sacramento, yes, they're number one again. I think it's 6 years in a row for Sacramento. No, number one. Can you guess what
Golden
number
State.
One on the list is? No, it wouldn't be Golden State. No
Lakers.
Way. They lost a lot of people. Not the Lakers.
Wait, I thought you meant last season.
Upcoming season.
Who they're predicting is going to be the most?
Yes. Who they is highest on the NBA League Pass rank. It's like who they think most people are going to want to watch.
Oh,
the best storylines this year.
The best storylines.
Most watchable team.
Clippers?
Lakers are number two, John. Clippers is a good one, and I think Clippers comes in at number four.
Brooklyn?
Brooklyn, no. Where is Brooklyn on this thing? I don't even know. I don't think they're not in the top. Oh, number 11 is the Brooklyn Nets.
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee's number three. Number one is a strange one, but I understand why people are thinking.
Philadelphia.
76ers coming in at number one. However, there is a little bit of a disappointment because last year, I think the Celtics were number three. No, they were number two last year as far as most watchable.
Makes sense.
This year, they are number 15. They have dropped 13 spots all the way to number 15 as far as being the most watchable, which is a little big of a drop. It all depends.
Like a lot of crap.
What do you mean?
This whole thing. Like we're predicting into the future who people are going to watch.
I'd prefer to get last year's numbers. You can't predict anything.
No, I think you can because that's what the networks have to do whenever they figure out who's going to get the primetime games and who's not. All this is the same prediction as this. What are more people going to tune in to watch? And the Celtics last year were a massive story because people thought that they were going to win a championship. You looked at Vegas. They were one of the top people favored to win a championship, especially in the East. They're expected to win the East.
Well, I mean, maybe it's the fact that Tatum is never going to live up to expectations.
Maybe that's the case. But
is that people are getting out.
But now with Taco Fall making the team, or at least getting a two-way contract. Maybe
not exactly making the team.
Well, he's got a two-way. Hey, they didn't lose him.
No.
That's the main thing.
That's the thing. They made the decision with their final roster spot, but Fall is going to spend most of his winter in Maine.
And if I'm in Milwaukee, I don't know how thrilled I am just to see a tall guy. I mean, that's not going to be... Like, it's cool when he's on the Celtics and everything, but if I'm in Milwaukee and they go, wow, they got a really tall guy.
If Taco Fall was playing on a different team and I knew he was going to be on that night, I'd want to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's...
I mean, I've only saw him play once in college. I mean...
That Duke game.
I mean, yeah. I wasn't like I was watching UCF every day.
I've watched parts of the three exhibition games. I saw all three exhibition games when he played.
Yeah, I've seen every minute of Taco Fall playing.
And there's one night he looked really good. The second game he didn't look good at all.
And the third one was... For the few minutes he was in, he did what he needed to do.
Yeah, toss up.
It's like I used to tune into Chuck Nevitt every time he came in because he was very tall.
Alex, go ahead.
Fred, I am irate right now. You went after LeBron James for being hypocritical, but yesterday you were a huge hypocrite. And let me explain. Years ago, Tuukka Rask missed a game for what may or may not have been hot brown rain, otherwise known as diarrhea. And you talked about being an ally. You talked about people coming out of the shadows supporting that. But then yesterday, Rich gets slop in his belly, has to miss work, and you reashamed him. And I think you owe all...
At no point did I reashame him. I just...
Oh, you reashamed him.
Oh, I reset every break. to let people know Rich wasn't here by explaining he had diarrhea.
That's an awesome word. What does rear shame mean?
Rear shame.
Oh, you rear shame.
No, he said rear shame.
Rear,
oh.
As in diarrhea.
Oh, rear shame.
Oh, okay. I thought it meant like a shaming again.
My mistake.
Diarrhea shame.
I did not. I just set up, so in case people were listening and they wondered where Rich was.
Every 15 minutes.
Every 15 minutes, I set up.
If Fred's out with the squirts, people know it. If I'm out with the squirts, people should know.
So I just thought it was important so people didn't freak out and think something was wrong.
Right.
I just simply informed. There was no judgment.
A lot of listeners that would like an apology, Fred. That's all I'm saying.
Apologize for just speaking the truth. I think that you owe me apology for taking my words out of context.
As a longtime sufferer, I just felt like I thought you were an ally.
I am an ally. I never said he shouldn't have left. In fact, John described to me the situation in the studio that Rich was in and said that there was every one of his senses was telling him that Rich should probably leave.
Yeah. I was not feeling good yesterday morning. And it wasn't until I got in either. And also just like, oh, you suck, body. Yep. And then I just like, all right, I got
to
get out of here.
All right, Tim, that's happened to me, Tim. And then once I left, I said, oh, okay, all hell's breaking loose. Let's pull over every 5 minutes and throw up. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, guys, on the officials, I have several problems. One is their age. Some of these guys are 60 years old. There's no question these guys are on the take. Not so much as to determine a game, but they can highly influence a game more than a player can. There's no internal revenue service on these guys. They can cause a game to go either way. Last night was a joke. And there's no investigation. The police have the internal, revenue service or whatever you want to call it, on these guys. There's nothing in place to see if these guys are on the take.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, there needs to be some sort of internal way that they can keep track and hold people accountable for bad calls.
The last thing they want to know is if these guys are on the take.
Sure.
The last thing that do you think the NFL wants to know if these guys got money on games? All I know is that they handed that game. They just gave it to Green Bay.
They did.
Finally. And then this show is getting so scatological. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey.
So I just wanted to know why Fred gets to publicly shame Rich over diarrhea.
Oh, my God.
When he was asking you about your bowel movement and you couldn't go to the bathroom for a week, you got all worked up, freaking out about it.
Because I think that there is a line that I'm not going to great detail describing a bowel movement. And first of all, there was nothing there. And second of all, that's my line. It, as childish as I am, and as many times as we played the Antonio Brown fart noise, I am not going to go in great detail about what poo looked like.
How many times just this morning did you go into great detail about the feces-covered Nick Cirelli?
I didn't say what it looked like. I just said that he had soiled himself. And I said he looked like Pigpen. There's a difference between...
That's right, Medford. Medford, where are you from? Marshfield. Marshfield's Pigpen.
So that's a story. His girlfriend came in. There was Nick laying very close to death. Do you know that your girlfriend actually left and went away and then rethought it and came back and got you?
Jeez. It was almost a Breaking Bad situation. She's a delicious attendant.
Yeah, she walked in and she went, oh. God. And then she left and she said, and she took her, she wiped off all the doorknobs.
Oh, all right.
I feel bad that Fred makes fun of you for pooping yourself up.
Please. Didn't shame Rich one time. I just announced every single time.
Listen, if I got Rhea, that's not shaming. That's facts.
I mean, I did not shame anyone. All right, Rich, what's coming up?
All right. Goodfellas. Martin Scorsese almost cut the best scene of the movie due to test audiences. And what happens when an Irishman pre-records a message to play at his funeral?
All right. Here are the headlines.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Dutcher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
based on the tweets that are going out, I'm supposed to say we are a Toucher and Rich, and you can find us on Twitch, twitch.tv, search the Sports Hub.
Yep.
We're on live every morning, and you can watch replays of the show. And if you get the Twitch app on your smartphone, simply look for the Toucher and Rich show. And you can see the three of us in all our glory.
Our own program director said, I wish Fred Toucher would promote Twitch as much as he promoted Rich having diarrhea yesterday. So there you go. So this is a brilliant idea. And I don't know if I've ever heard of this happening before. I'm surprised it hasn't before. But an Irish man at his own funeral had pre-recorded a message to be played as the casket was lowered into the grave. So this is something that a video that has gone around the internet now. And let's go ahead and get it. This is the funeral of Shea Bradley is his name. This is the grieving family standing around the grave, a crowd of about 40, 50 people. And this message is played as he is lying in his casket in the ground.
Hello? 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 Let me out! Hello? Hello? Let me get back in here. Let me out. Hello? 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 Hello, please?
Hello?
This is shame. I'm in the box. No, I'm front of you. I'm dead. You gotta hear that.
Hello again. Hello. I just called to say.
Can you imagine if you're sitting there thinking something poignant was going to be said? Like, he's left a message for all of you guys at the grave, and it's just him knocking on the inside of the tomb
saying,
let me out.
That's the best thing in the world. Gallows humor.
I mean, that's awesome.
No, it's the best thing you can do. See, ladies and gentlemen, comedy can do things like that. They can take something that is incredibly dark and, surprisingly enough, make it a little bit more palatable.
Oh, that is just phenomenal.
Well, Rich... tell that to everyone who freaks out whenever a comedian says anything about something bad that happened. See, that is the definition of gallows humor. And you heard people at the funeral laughing because they finally got one more crack at the guy's sense of humor, had a good laugh, and then went about their business.
Good for him, man. Good for him.
But if you had a scene in like a show where they did that, then that would be, they'd probably... be run out of time.
Because, like, I mean, the feelings of the pit of your stomach when they mentioned, like, let's say it was your father or something like that, and they say, all right, well, we did not know this, but he has recorded some last words he wants to say to you. You got to be sitting there going, oh, my goodness, what is this going to be? And for it to be that, brilliant. Brilliant!
No, it's gallows humor, mm-hmm. which the Irish are wonderful at, and it just shows, you know, comedy has the ability to take something very painful and for even just a moment, make it feel more, a little levity at one moment.
Now, Martin Scorsese, when he's not yelling at the world about how bad Marvel movies are, he is promoting his brand new film, The Irishman, which is coming out in a couple of weeks, 3 hours long, I believe.
And if you're Mark Maron, you can call him Marty, even though you were in a movie for about 5 seconds.
Oh, okay. Or you could, if you're Jim Gray, you can call Giselle G, as we played earlier today. Okay.
Jim Gray is just awful.
But I know you and I, Fred, agree that if not the best movie of all time, Goodfellas is one of the
Goodfellas
best movies
of all time. The best movie of all
time. See, I agree. It's my favorite movie of all time. John, I don't know if it's the same for you.
Yeah, no, it's there.
But he sat down with Entertainment Weekly and said that there were two scenes in the film that almost didn't make it because they had test screenings that almost determined it the other way. The very first scene that they said that they actually did end up taking out was at the opening when it shows Billy Batts being stabbed in the trunk by Joe Pesci. Apparently they stabbed him too many times.
And seven.
The crowd got, yeah, seven times. And the crowd got so disgusted by the violence that several people walked out. So they lowered it to only four times.
Right.
He was stabbed. However, it says here, the screen test also allowed Scorsese to keep in a scene that studio executives were urging him to cut. In it, the gangsters sit with DeVito's mother, who is played by Scorsese's real mom, Catherine, as Batts pleads out in the trunk, which, by the way, it might be the best scene in that movie.
It's the best scene in the movie by far. It's got the best. It's got the best line in the movie.
Well, guys, looking this way, one of the dogs looking the other way.
What do you want from me?
What do you want from me? It's the best line in the movie of a great film. It's the best scene of a great film. And the studio thought it was too long, apparently. But people in screenings responded to it and laughed, and that's why it stayed put. It's why Scorsese is thankful for early screenings. He said, a preview screening version doesn't mean it was my cut. I'm in the process of making a film. I screen it for some people. They go, maybe you don't need that. Maybe you need this. And in that case, thank God for the audience. Because of that movie, it's the best scene of the movie. And they almost took it out.
And apparently this Irishman movie is supposed to be something else.
Yeah, I guess it's if it's not 100%, I don't even have that clip ready to go. Darn it.
But it doesn't come out on, it comes out November 1st and then comes to Netflix on the 21st.
Yep, that is the case. So, Fred, I know you hate Baker Mayfield. Well, let me give you a little more fuel. I already mentioned earlier in the show some statistics that put everything in really in a good light for Baker, including that he has less passing touchdowns than Mason Rudolph, less passing yards than Andy Dalton, a lower completion percentage than Luke Falk, who, as you said, might not even be in the league anymore.
No.
A lower quarterback rating than Eli Manning, but he also has the most interceptions in the NFL. He had his fourth interception of his fourth three-interception game of his career on Sunday. And he's only played 20 games, so that's a pretty ridiculous stat. Mayfield leads the NFL with 11 interceptions this season, Fred, and 25 dating to last season, where he also led the league.
Yeah, he's a gunslinger, man. He's confident. He gets out there. He's a leader.
The Browns are 0-7 when Mayfield has a multi-interception game.
No, but that's what's great about him is he's a gunslinger. He comes out there with confidence. He gets the guys around him. I wonder how many times he craps himself again before the team starts looking around and going, you know, you're making a lot of money off endorsements, and you suck.
It is. I mean, every other commercial seemed it was Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
There's the one where he's sitting in the stadium with his girlfriend as if it's their house.
I'd give a shoe deal to the kicker from the Rams before I'd give one to Baker Mayfield.
Well, you saw that picture that I posted. It was my sister, who actually is down in Nashville, sent me a photo, and there's a billboard of Johnny Manziel that's down there. And it says, when I got cut, Direct still wanted me on their team. Get Direct and get going. And it's got Johnny Manziel. Direct Auto Insurance.
Well, you can be like Richard Todd, who was a star at Alabama. And when he got out of the NFL, he just started cold calling people. He was a financial guy and started cold calling people and just going, I'm Richard Todd from Alabama. And they said, here's my money. Take it.
Take it, please.
Take my money.
Ugh.
All right, so we will break, and we come back. We'll find out what Zolak and Bertrand have on the way.
Watch the show on the Sports Hub channel on the Twitch app.
Is that a euphemism for some kind of sex?
It's Toucher and Rich on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. If you missed part of today's Toucher and Rich show, you can listen to the podcast on our website at 98.5thesportshub.com or on the Sports Hub app. And if you're short on time, we have 30-minute condensed versions available, too. I don't know why you'd want a condensed version. You want to hear every sweet, sweet word that came out of our mouths.
Also, if you could, I'm walking in this year's Light the Night Walk this Thursday night to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. As I said before, I've seen them perform miracles. I can't think of many better places to donate your money, and the listeners have always been very generous. So if you would like to donate to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society and our Light the Night Walk, you can go to @TucherandRich on Twitter. On our Facebook page, there's a link as well.
And I have a Patreon, which I can encourage you to give money to.
A Patreon?
Yeah, just for giving me money. All right, Scott Zolak. I think one is more deserving than the other.
Hello.
Everyone give Light the Night money. All right, Scott, I will as well. Scott, go ahead. What's up? What's going down? You don't feel good?
It's like that time of year, like achy and just like, I don't have
that kind of year.
No?
I'm always at 100%.
No, I don't think so.
No, I'm always at 100%, raring to go. I got energy for days.
It's just, I don't know. When's the last time we were in studio? Friday, right? Yeah.
That's been a while.
Yeah? Mm. You guys all over the place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You're dressed up today, huh? What you got going on? Beatles Kel dressed up.
Important things.
Important things.
Important things.
We got important things on our show today.
Now, you are going to be at the Meadowlands. Now, will you broadcast on...
I think I'll broadcast from my bed.
On Monday?
Yeah.
Hopefully yours works, unlike the one I bought that didn't
figure
work.
Figure it out. Like, might not
Skype,
work.
Though. I want him to Skype.
I'm not Skype. I'm not sitting
there.
They're
going to Skype staring at
Do you miss seeing your guy Gruden up there? Because you guys used to say hello to each other on
Skype. They don't pay you for simulcast.
We get out in the hallway, and he's like...
Dock his pay.
Sharpshooter.
They don't pay him for the simulcast.
Dock his simulcast pay for the day.
He's like, they grow you so big.
He said that to you?
Yeah.
And did he know, because he's a football, obviously, he knows everything. He knew immediately, was he able to name stats or any plays or anything
that? But every time he would see me, he said, you know, I hate coming here after that stupid fumble. You know that was a fumble, right? And I'm like, yeah, I know it's a fumble.
It was a fumble.
Fumble.
Was the game fixed last night?
No, I don't think it's fixed. I just don't think they have a grasp on. Now, here's the problem, and I think we're going to talk a lot about this on our show, is that it seems like they're forcing them to look for things that may not be there.
Well, they're not there. I mean, they're calling penalties that didn't happen.
Like, you know, like they said, we're going to have more holding calls this year. Like, why all of a sudden do you just say, we're going to have more holding calls this year?
Yeah, but if you say we're going to have more hands to the face
calls.
Hands
to the face thing is ridiculous.
But then wait for there to be hands to the face. I mean, it wasn't even close.
The explanation of the poll report is ridiculous.
Please.
Absolutely
it's
ridiculous.
The neck. Yeah.
There's something going on, and it started when I think it's in the polling complex in the booth. Not in the booth, but at Command Central. And his name's Al Riveron.
Yeah,
I think the NFL has an Al Riveron problem.
I think that these umps are in the pocket.
It's a problem now, because we're coming in talking about officials, it seems, every day instead of the game.
Either the NFL once, and we talked about this with Brinson, just once doesn't care about Detroit and says, you know, we would rather have Green Bay win that division, or those guys had money on the game. All right, so you're going to talk about that. You got
that Billy Jaffe's in.
You got the Jaff man coming off the win.
Jaff, some good audio with him and Pastrnak after the game.
Thanks. Yeah. All right. Well, that will do it for us. You know what? It's going to be a nice one out there. Maybe go out and look at the leaves as they turn beautiful, beautiful colors as they only do here in good old New England.
Yeah, go leaf peeping.
Yeah, peeping. Oh, boy. Look at me in a tree. With my binoculars.
All right. Everyone have a wonderful day. That'll do it for us. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.